If it hasn't rusted through, has decent good tires and an airbag, why trade? I'm David Brancaccio. First, Federal Reserve policymakers meeting today and tomorrow may start talking about hiking interest rates sooner, the year after next, instead of the year after the year after next. So far, market interest rates do not reflect other signs of inflation in the economy. While the 10-year interest rate is up at 1.51% at the moment, it's still wicked low, as we say. A puzzle to unravel. David Kelly is chief global strategist at JP Morgan Funds.
I mean, we've seen 5% growth in consumer prices, and just this morning, the government reported a 6.6% year-over-year increase at the wholesale level. So there is plenty of inflation. But what I think is going on right now is there are some technical factors which are just stopping interest rates from rising. One of them is the Treasury Department had a huge amount of money on deposit with the Federal Reserve, which it's actually been using to pay the bills for the last 5 or 6 months. So instead of issuing new debt, which would have pushed up interest rates, they've just been running down the checking account. And that has stopped interest rates rising so far. But we still think, look, if there's inflation there, we are going to see higher rates in the months ahead.
Economist David Kelly at JP Morgan Funds. Let's do the numbers. To start the trading day, the Dow is down 110 points, 0.3%. The S&P 500 is down 0.1%. The NASDAQ is also down 0.1%. Americans are driving older cars. Our national fleet is now more than 12 years old, on average a record high, according to the firm IHS Market. Marketplace's Samantha Fields looked into the forces driving this trend.
The average age of cars in the U.S. has been creeping up for as long as IHS has been keeping track, almost 20 years now. In 2002, the average age was about 9.5 years. Now it's 12. Michelle Krebs at Auto Trader says the main reason is that
the quality of vehicles is so much better than it was 10, 20 years ago, and vehicles last a lot longer.
On top of that, she says, in the pandemic,
we didn't go anywhere. There weren't as many miles put on vehicles. We weren't commuting.
So fewer people wanted or needed to buy cars. And even if they did, Todd Compo at IHS Market says in the early days of the pandemic,
not only were facilities shut down to produce vehicles, but also dealerships were closed.
Now that dealerships are open and a lot of people are ready to buy cars, Compo says there aren't enough to meet demand.
There's the potential that people may be getting priced out of even the used car market because the prices have gone up so much in the past 6 months or so.
And that, Compo says, is likely to last at least for the rest of this year. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Today, as it happens, someone in the Brancaccio family is casting off a 21-year-old car. Thank you for your enduring service, Honda Accord EX Coupe Vintage Y2K. The V6 was still smooth as glass, so why dump it? Well, it was one of the 67 million vehicles subject to the Takata exploding airbag recall starting back in 2014. They keep sending recall notices saying, in essence, not your turn yet, but have a nice day. When Citigroup studied the economic cost over 20 years of systemic racism in America, the answer was $16 trillion. Of that colossal sum, the largest piece was attributed to a failure to equitably invest in entrepreneurs who are black or otherwise of color. $13 trillion that could have been was not, according to the Citigroup report from last year. 1 year into the renewed pledges of investment that followed the murder of George Floyd, let's talk to Melissa Bradley, founder and managing partner of what's called 1863 Ventures, a nonprofit business development organization. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Now, you started this in, I think it was 2016, originally to help black entrepreneurs in the southeastern part of D.C. What are you seeing, not just during pandemic, but what has changed? What's gotten better? What is sticking in the wrong place?
The three biggest things we've seen is a dramatic increase in entrepreneurship, particularly amongst African American and Latinx founders. And particularly amongst Black women. I'd say a plethora of new venture capital funds now focused on Black and Brown founders, and an amazing amount of corporate commitments now also focused on Black and Brown founders. And so I think a combination of COVID-19 and the death of George Floyd, unfortunately, have triggered people to reorient what's important to them and recognize that there's real ROI opportunity in these communities that have been historically overlooked and underserved.
You're not thinking that the venture capital money and the other commitments from corporate America, you're not seeing that as a fad?
I think for some it's a fad, but in most part, no. I think on the corporate side, you know, what changed post the George Floyd death was a reimagination and a reorientation that they should not be investing in a scattergram, but they really should be thinking about what and who are the communities that they can best serve? Where is their clear market gap and what is the ROI?
ROI, return on investment.
Right. So I think you're beginning to see large companies like Salesforce and WeWork and Comcast and others really play a role in saying we want to support these entrepreneurs, not just because it's the right thing to do, but we actually see it as a business opportunity. And so many of the companies that actually have grant programs are also now thinking about supplier diversity.
The different inputs, maybe that should be more diverse as well.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when Target came out with their commitment to the Black community, one is that it was about changing who's on the shelf, but also recognizing that their pipeline from real estate development to printers to toilet paper to construction to lighting, there was not a level of diversity that exists in that supply chain. So I think, you know, while people typically think about what do I do to externally help Black and Brown communities, I think it's amazing that people say, wait a minute, I have a natural pipeline opportunity to bring these communities in to really have a much longer term relationship with my business.
Melissa Bradley is founder and managing partner at 1863 Ventures. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
I can promise you there are developments afoot in money, markets, workplace culture, and innovation. Listen later today to Marketplace with Guy Risdahl on many public radio stations, of course, or you can stream it at your leisure, marketplace.org for that. I'm David Brancaccio with our morning report from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.